How good and pleasant it is to dwell among you. And how supported I feel from all the support of all the teachers that I've learned from, and their teachers, and their teachers, and their teachers, all the way back, way before Siddhartha Gautama and his wife Yasodhara came on the scene. I wanted to talk a little bit about the origin story and help decolonize it as it has been colonized. I'm thankful, so thankful, to my teacher, Larry Young, who was the first person to really offer a different narrative of the story of the Buddha. I also have to mention John Peacock, who, as a cultural anthropologist, helped me reframe the story. I have some views that are non-traditional, and I invite you to challenge them. The main one being that Yasodhara was actually a Buddha as well. Imagine what it must have been like to be born into a military family, receiving martial training, sword, bow, spear, and hand-to-hand combat. And you have a cousin who you think is fly, and there's chemistry, but you're young, but you still fall in love, and it works out. Your family's actually arrange a marriage. But you're young. You're really young. And it just so happens that you both share the same ideals. You don't believe in the military. You don't believe in the caste system. And you stay up late at night dreaming about dismantling it. It's hard for us to even imagine because we don't have anything quite like it. I guess the closest would be to stay up late at night thinking about completely dismantling our economical system and making it a shared gift economy or something. That's kind of similar. Siddhartha Gautama was radical, and so was Yasodhara, and courageous. Imagine what it must have been like growing up, and, you know, warfare was really different there in those days. Very common to lose limbs in warfare, and very common for very young soldiers to die, even children. They dreamed of another way. It took 16 years for Yasodhara to conceive. It's hard for us to imagine that kind of family pressure to create an heir. But something changed inside of her, or maybe the relationship changed. Something changed where it finally happened. I radically dream that she became enlightened first. And then it was up to Siddhartha to catch up. And so she was like, yeah, do your thing. I got you. I'm going to hold the baby down. And I'm going to do my thing as well. I'm going to actually live very simply while you're gone. I'm going to take all my jewelry off. I'm going to sleep on the floor instead of in a lofty bed. And as John Peacock liked to say, they lived in thatched wooden structures, circular structures, like Maasai. There was no palace. And that's a very radical thing to say, and some people really take offense to it. So don't accept it without scrutiny. And so Siddhartha went on a journey to find enlightenment that was extreme initially, practicing with the ascetics who were into practices like just consuming one grain of rice a day, becoming really emaciated, meditating all day, holding postures for weeks, doing really physically challenging works, until coming to a place of feeling like, wow, this isn't taking me where I want to go. We all maybe can relate to that. We've explored traditions and perhaps studied with teachers who disappointed us, or experienced some other kind of redirection. Siddhartha's redirection was actually a memory. He remembered being a child and sitting under a tree by the river, and hearing the music of the water, and feeling completely interconnected to everything, every single thing. And that bolt of lightning from that memory was like, wow, I want to be there again. And I'm not right now, starving, holding my arm over my head. So he left. He decided to go under the Bodhi tree. And he was visited by all kinds of challenges, internal demons. But he felt empowered by that sense of he had the right to awaken, just like Yasodhara did, perhaps. He had the right to touch the earth and let out a lion's roar and banish all the insecurities and visitations from past traumas and doubt and all those demons. Turning an ocean of arrows fired at him from this negative forces in his psyche to flowers. And it felt good. It felt good to awaken. It felt so good that he spent 49 days just walking around the tree, like feeling into the practice, feeling into, oh, this is what did it for me. These awakenings, these insights, this is what it is. This is what it feels like to be one with everything. I'm going to walk around this tree and feel every molecule in my body as it traverses the earth. I'm going to feel what it is to be here. And as he reintegrated into society, it was children he played with first. He took delight in the children, took delight in the laughter of their innocence. And he started to structure in his mind. He realized that he's going to have to use concepts and language to translate this experience. And it's a little bit heartbreaking, but he felt empowered by the freedom that he felt. He's probably so hyped to tell Yasodhara, "You made it look easy, but I had to work at it really hard." Meanwhile, she was dealing with family, saying no to suitors, raising the youth, relating. How frustrating it must have been to have so much wisdom and so much love in her heart and so much faith and have it completely dismissed and doubted. She was ridiculed for not wearing her jewelry of her stature. She was ridiculed for living a simple life, a humble life, even though she was a warrior class and had a certain entitlement she wouldn't receive because she was satisfied. And that's such the antithesis of the state that we are in most of the time, as is the first transmission of the first teaching of the Four Noble Truths, when it was time to bring the concepts together and bring the teachings together and bring them back to his homies who ridiculed him for eating food. Siddhartha was like, "Well, I got another way if you want to hear it." So the first noble truth is there is dukkha. It's an interesting word. It comes from another time, the time of the wheel cart. Duke being the dirt that gets in between the axle and the wheel and makes it wobble. So if we're, you know, it's hard for us to have a word land like that. We don't really have a word like that. Hoopty is kind of a word, kind of like that, you know? It's hoopty. And it's funny, hoopty comes from a car that's hard to start. Similar. I think it's a good, you know, contemporary way of relating. But it means more than that. It means imperfection, stress, salty. It's kind of similar to too much salt. Second noble truth really breaks down to the origin of dukkha being clinging. And we see it so much. We cling to our pleasure and we cling to our pain. Somehow we define ourselves through both. We cling. We hold tight. And everything we hold tight and cling to, we lose. Every single thing. And it breaks our heart. Again and again and again. And so much, there's so much wisdom in actually being able to be with dissatisfaction. Before I came here, I visited my mom, and she just got two puppies, since puppies are on the brain. And I wanted to do something really generous for her because she was stressed out. She was just like living with the puppies, like would keep them at her feet, sleeping on the couch, being near them, getting up in the middle of the night. She has a little wooden stool that she'd sit on in this little pen. And I was just like, wow, this is crazy. This is like really difficult what you're dealing with. And she's like, tell me about it, but this is how we're doing it. So I was like, you know what? Let me handle it tonight. She's like, no. She like wouldn't even, but she let me take the seat, you know, while she slept on the couch. And hours go by, and finally I'm like, I guess I'm going to try and sleep in here. You know, I wanted to leave, and the puppies were like, ah, ah. I was like, all right. So super uncomfortable, like laying in this little thing, like, you know, and the puppies are all sleeping on me, and it was, there's pleasure in it too. And I was like, how much of this can I stand? This like exhaustion. And I looked at my mom, her mouth was open. She's like, I was like, she's sleeping really deep. I'm gonna stay right here as long as I can. And it became excruciatingly uncomfortable because I hadn't slept on the floor in so long. I've been sleeping in lofty beds, you know, I wasn't used to it. And I practice through it. There's the practice of aligning the breath with discomfort, watching it in the inhale and watching it in the exhale, and seeing those moments of liberation, because it's not constant. It's actually really empowering. Can do it with all different kinds of ailments, or afflictions, I should say. Can do it with pain, because pain doesn't go forever. You know, there's little rests. So it's like leaning into those rests. The third noble booth, the third boble booth, which brings us to the third noble truth. There is cessation from suffering. There is cessation from this dissatisfaction. It exists. As Larry Young liked to say, it's like the good news. In Christianity, the good news, it's that version in Buddhism. And it involves letting go. Which is the third noble truth, this freedom of suffering. And we've all experienced it. In fact, we're about to experience it right now. You're already sitting upright. Bless you. What's it like to let go of the sound of the bell? Bless you, when I'm speaking over it, there's two different sounds. Can you be with both, but let go of one? Can you understand me while still hearing the bell? What's it like to let go of the sound of my voice and listen to the bell? Even if I start saying something interesting, talking about the cure of COVID that's coming, that was found deep in the mountains, and it's going to change our world finally, but will you cling to that, can you stay with the bell? Even though I might have something riveting, I just actually heard that they've actually decided to let go of the information of extraterrestrials. I caught you. Stay with the bell. Stay with it. Can you let go of something else? What are you clinging to right now? Wow, you made it. You're free. Are you clinging to something? Is there something you can cling to right now that's interfering with your awakening? Has aversion set in? Are you wishing that I'd stop ringing the bell? I won't. Because we're practicing with it. But eventually I will, because I have to. Are you clinging, though? Can you hear the ring out without clinging to it? Just letting it be in awareness. We can bring awareness to clinging, and we can cling. They're actually two different things. And the good news is one has the power of destroying the other. Awareness of clinging disrupts clinging, or at least has the power to. This is what we're doing. As we bring awareness to things, they change. Our experience of them changes. Our relationship to them changes. And suddenly, it becomes something else. We are not our clinging. We are not our suffering. We are not our trauma. And with courage, we can bring awareness to these. All of these things, all of these variations of dukkha, and we can liberate. The fourth noble truth elaborates on this way of liberating. using wisdom, ethical behavior, and mental discipline. Sila, Panya, and Samadhi. Panya, Sila, Samadhi. You already have the first noble truth. Wise view. It's not an ideology. It's not a system. It's a living insight. It's what brought you here. It's what brought you to a place of reflection and transformation. It's a living organism. It's a part of you. The second noble truth, wise thought or intention. Really speaks to this training of the mind. We're supported by what came before, this idea of dissatisfaction and satisfaction. This wisdom of we live in a world full of imperfections. We live in a stressful world. Doesn't mean we have to become stress. The blossoming of ethical behavior comes out of wisdom. Our words are powerful. The other day I mentioned how Bruce Lee, instead of saying negative things, he would, when the thought would come, he would just take the thought and imagine it bursting into flames on a piece of paper. He'd like, in his mind, write it on a piece of paper and have it burst into flames. Wise speech is all about not causing harm with our words to ourselves and others. And because actions blossom from speech, it's natural progression that wise action follows. We act from a place of the wisdom of interbeing. We try not to harm with our actions. Try our best. And actions come into this world of acting and having to earn a living, so we look at how we're making money. Wise livelihood. We try our very best not to cause harm. when I was in my 20s, I was offered $40,000 to take a video of women's behinds in Cuba, like while they're just walking around. I was like, what a ridiculous thing to ask me to do. But for a second, I was like, $40,000? But I refused to do it. Because it just felt so wrong in so many ways. And sometimes we don't have the power to, or we feel trapped and we make money in some way that is complicated. So from that, we move into concentration. Wise effort, wise mindfulness, and wise concentration, the mental disciplines. Which we're all doing here. We're all coming into a place of really looking at the mind with intimacy. This expansion of mind being through the whole body. This expansion of heart being through the whole body. We're decolonizing our minds, our bodies, our spiritual traditions. We are freeing ourselves from moment to moment, from breath to breath, savor the moments where you are not feeling greed, hatred, or delusion. Clinging, aversion, confusion. Those moments are times of being in a state of awakening. Again. And again. Bless you. And again. We train to build the continuity of those moments. Again. Again, this is a Panawati shtick. Great teacher from DC. Again. Are you clinging? Are you feeling aversion to my shtick? Are you confused by this exercise? I don't think you are. Again. Well, maybe the aversion part. Again. 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 Free. 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 experience what it is to be free without clinging to it, knowing that it comes in waves. And every breath, we are new. Every breath, we are new.
We do indeed live in uncertain and precarious times. It's a practice, learning how to live with the mystery and the unknowing of all the things that arise around us unexpectedly. So I'm going to read this. We'd like to let everyone know that we have had another additional positive COVID case. And this was discovered during the testing, the mid-retreat testing. Of course, the person was immediately supported and has left the campus. We've sanitized their place in the hall and all the public access spaces and all frequently touched surfaces in the dining hall, the upper meditation hall, and dorm room. The person was sitting and residing in the meta dorm on the second floor. The person had a second shift PM pot washing meditation, and we will connect with the other pot washers individually. This person did attend the affinity sit on Wednesday and the 10 a.m. practice group with Bruni on Thursday. And just remember that COVID is not generally spread through surface contact. So again, this is a general exposure notification for most of you. And also as a reminder, according to the CDC, people who have general contact should monitor for symptoms. Practice social distancing, wash hands often, try not to touch your face too much, and wear a mask or facial covering when in public spaces, all of the practices that we've been engaged in here. So for those of you who were in closer contact, as identified above with the pot washing and the dorm room and what have you, the affinity sit, the practice group. Be extra vigilant. and monitoring for any symptoms, and let the retreat. And let the retreat staff okay, I'll read that sentence again. For those of you who were in closer contact, be extra vigilant in monitoring for any symptoms. And let the retreat staff know if you are in need of an additional test. Thank you all for continuing to be vigilant in your protective practices. So the likelihood of transmission in a masked, silent environment with fully vaccinated groups is extremely rare. The practitioner had some close contact with friends before arriving at the retreat and suspects this is where their transmission occurred. Our protocols have served us very well, and we feel very confident we can continue to hold a safe and meaningful retreat for you for the rest of the retreat. So continue to use the symptom checklist in your room. If you feel sick or have symptoms, please come to the staff office and ask to be tested. Thank you for your care and listening. One of our retreat staff team members will be in the retreat staff office until 5:45, from 5:15 to 5:45 this evening, if you have questions or concerns. So, in our practice, remember the continuity of practice. Take a moment right now to notice what has arisen in your body. Offer it kind attention. And discern with your own wisdom what is arising in the mind and what the body is telling you. Each moment we have these opportunities to practice. If there's any burning, urgent questions, I can take it right now, but I'm not really the one, you know, who knows all this. But I do want to acknowledge that someone or someones may really want to speak something. Do we have any? And again, the retreat manager is in the office, who may be able to better answer any questions you may have. But I just want to see if there's anyone hearing this news right now who may need to ask anything.
Funny, the mind is actually okay, but the body's like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. Please tell me about your oh shit practice.
I'm sure that it would be a really, really good practice all the time. Yeah, offer attention there. You know, it's located somewhere. We all have our oh shit tendencies, right? You know, our hearts might palpitate, our breath might come faster. We might start gritting our teeth. You know, we all have whatever our particular style of dealing with scary, frightening things. And if that's happening, this is a good opportunity to locate it and look at it. Is that a tendency, a habit? Because in the continuity of practice, then you can always go to those places because you begin to become very familiar with where it arises, and you can take care of it before it goes out of your window of tolerance. So thank you for that question. I think everyone appreciates it.
And
we're right here.
Really quickly, just stand up for a second. Stand up. When you stand, it relaxes the feeling of being cornered and passive and seated. And you can also feel your center of gravity. So when I have that oh shit response, I'm like, let me get up. Because you can defend yourself and you can run. So standing is a really, it's a warrior posture. So stand up to your fear. Like what? You know? What? Feels better, right? Immediately.
Some people might not be able to. So I just wanted to be clear. Did the person who tested positive today have contact with the other person who also tested positive? Or are these separate? They brought them in with them from contact they had before they got here.
They were in separate dorms, but I don't know if they're on the same work group. I don't know.
Okay, that's probably a question that you could take to the retreat manager. However, they did express that they may have had contact the day before they arrived. And so know that the period before the viral load gets strong enough to transmit would have been right around today or tomorrow, if that's the case. So you may be able to get more information from the retreat manager. And to, you know, to ease you, but it's probably unlikely that it got transmitted here in this with our COVID protocol. So we're just going to take maybe one more question, so that we can move towards our meals and other questions. You can just walk over to the retreat manager's office and get them answered. Yes, Finn?
Do you have something for the opposite of the oh shit? Like, I'm just immediately dissociated. I'm like, I'm in a happy other place. I'm like spiritual bypass about it. I'm like, all right, probably not. I was at the LGBT thing. This is fine. Everything's fine. So like, you know, and I can notice that and I can watch it, right? And I can even be with it where I can even laugh at it, right? Like, I'm laughing with y'all right now where I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. Way to keep yourself safe, body. But is there like an opposite to the stand up for when you're dissociated?
Thank you. Did you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I have an inclination towards that. It's going to be all right, you know. I'm all right, you know, also. So, yeah, I can't really offer, like, I guess, clench every muscle and just be like, no, I don't want COVID. I don't know. And then relax. I don't know.
You know, I would say to that exactly that. You know, when we are cloaked or engulfed in fear, anxiety, we're leaning into the future. We're leaning away from the present moment. Right now, we're okay. That's what we know. Let's have that. And, you know, I mean, if we, you know, feel like, oh God, am I not okay? What are we going to do right now but worry about it? So right now, we're all okay. If anyone has any symptoms, I'm sure you would have already gone, taken your temperature, done the COVID protocol that's been offered. And so let's just rest in a soft place right now and not anticipate, maybe I do, you know, why? Why? So let's just stay present, stay in your practice. There's still time to completely practice like your hair is on fire before you start worrying about what's going to happen in the next few minutes or the next day. We still have this refuge and this sanctuary. So let's get some nourishment now.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.